Hi, I'm Angela Sterrett. The last time Canada's men's soccer team went to the World Cup was in 1986. The Beastie Boys were still recording Fight for Your Right. The Oprah Winfrey Show hadn't yet debuted. Waterbeds were still cornering the mattress industry. Now, 35 years later, Canada is fighting to return to that moment. This week, Canada's men beat Mexico at a World Cup qualifying game, winning 2-1 in minus 10 degrees Celsius at Edmonton's Commonwealth Stadium. Now, this doesn't mean we're on a path to victory just yet. This is just one of several qualifying events, but it's still a huge deal for a lot of fans. Shireen Ahmed is a contributor to TSN, and she's the co-host of Burn It All Down, the podcast. Today, she'll explain how soccer has found the spotlight and what that tells us about how Canada is changing. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Angela. Thank you for having me.
I mean, this is kind of going off script, but just before we get into the actual game itself, a friend of mine sent me a view of the stadium with the snow. And I know a lot of people were looking at that sight with sort of like fear and trepidation, but also excitement. What went through your mind when you saw those shots of that snowy stadium field?
I was like, can this actually be more Canadian? Soccer and snow makes sense to me. I've played soccer my whole life, and I've played in frost, I've played in snow, played in mud. The elements play a part of this game, and I have always felt like the football goddesses enjoy this, and they, you know, put forth and they conspire with the weather to bring forth something entertaining, be it heat, be it rain, be it sleet.
Oof, I can feel it. One of the main reasons why I did not put my son into hockey, I was like, I'm not doing this at 4 a.m. Tell me about the moments when you saw the snow and that the minus 10 degree temperatures start to impact the gameplay.
Well, if we sort of look at the game as a whole, I mean, there weren't a whole bunch of shots on net, and that makes sense despite dynamic stretching and warming up for the team. It takes a while. It actually takes a while. I don't even think Mexico had a shot on net for a really long time within the first half. But what ends up happening is we see the difference between the two teams come forth really quickly.
Did you feel that the cold did play into Canada's hands a bit?
I think absolutely. No one wants to play in that, especially the Mexicans. I said this. I seen them at the 60th minute. They looked like they were asking themselves that question. And
how, you know, within the first part, it was 2-0 Canada, but also even how the Canadian players were more comfortable more quickly, had eased into the game and started their passing and completion. I mean, the second goal, you know, honestly, by Kyle Larin was off of stopped play and then off his foot. And that's really interesting because to know where you have to be in those conditions on that pitch that is arguably cold and wet, also it's AstroTurf, it's not grass, and the control of the ball and the way the ball bounces definitely differs, and Mexico is absolutely at a disadvantage not having the amount of play. I mean, a couple of Canadian players, including Atiba Hutchinson, also play in Turkey where there can be a lot of frost. And I think that's important to keep in mind that the skills that they have actually came into play during this game. Alphonso Davies plays in Germany, but all of these players growing up having played in Canada have arguably played in the snow. Like Alphonso Davies, when he came to Canada, he was a former refugee. He was from Edmonton. There's no doubt in my mind he knows how to do this. I will say this, that the last 10 minutes of the game were incredible. And at that point, you realize that Mexico has not only warmed up sufficiently, but are continuously attacking.
Canada need to defend. Ball still loose across. It's inside the six. It's cleared out.
And so, you know, props to them for continuing to keep attacking into extra time of the second half, because that's what they were doing. But it took them that long to be able to match the speed and the pace and the Canadians.
Yeah, and I guess some people are saying, you know, the weather had this huge part of Canada's win. But, I mean, tell me, what we saw on the pitch? What were the moments that made you think, you know, wow, we really have a powerful team here?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it was the elements that did this. I think the squad actually did this. I think the roster is very powerful. I think John Herdman, their coach since 2018, has found a recipe of chemistry, and we saw that. For me, the most heart-stopping moment is definitely an extra time when Borjan saved the shot on the line.
A delivery. Oh! And it's not in! Pushed out! Borjan said no!
There were, you know, the Mexican team, the tricolor, meaning tricolored, were absolutely in our 18-yard box. They were attacking till the end. I was extremely nervous because it's like they had suddenly figured out how to be cohesive very quickly. Yeah. So I was very nervous. So Borjan saving this said, okay, he's still on fire. He is still in absolute, like, mode. And the goalkeeper is the last defender. Is the last line of defense. And he was, so for me, nothing stands out more than that save. Because I would have completely, I'm an anxious mess anyway when I watch sports, I would have lost it completely. So that was the first thing. The second thing is Johnson's assist to Kyle Lahren's goal, the first one.
Johnson has a strike, Kucho spills, Lahren!
I love that. And Kyle Lahren is not the most prominent player. Alphonso Davies arguably is the most prominent player on that squad. So it was really nice to see Lahren, who is from Brampton originally, get that beautiful goal.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about the people who make the game. Earlier you were just talking about how this team was gelling better than they had before.
Wins against Mexico are few and far between by Canada. I mean, they played them 32 times since 1957, and this was only the fifth time that they beat them, and the first in 21 years, and the first time on Canadian soil since 1990.
And people are really pointing to coach John Herdman for building up this team and making it one that could play on the international stage. What is the story of how he did that?
Well, I think it... John Herdman, for those that don't know, it was actually the coach of the women's national soccer team and was with them for a successful, you know, medal performance in the Olympics in 2016 as well, but decided to step away and go to the men's team. But he has a way of understanding where the shortcomings are and then capitalizing on the strengths. And John Herdman, from what I know, and I've interacted a lot with the women's players, the Olympic champions, they speak very highly of him, and his approach is to understand individual skill, but then build it as a collective. And I believe that's what he's done here.
Really proud of the lads, proud of the performance. These boys bought into it. It took them time to recognize that, you know, we're for real. It's for real. But they've built a foundation here that they'll fight and they'll work for each other. And when that's there, the talent comes out. So, it's great. It's brilliant.
And I want to talk about Atiba. Atiba Hutchinson is one of the players who has said Herdman really helped the team believe in themselves. And that probably came at an important time, given that in 2016, Hutchinson was thinking about not even trying for the World Cup anymore. What have we seen from him in the past few years?
Hutchinson has a history of playing overseas. He played in Denmark and, you know, now he's captain of this squad, but also captain of, you know, Betsikas in Turkey. Confidence plays a huge role. And I think that we don't see that. So the role of a coach to foster that self-confidence and belief in oneself and the idea that, you know, I see this for you. I see you being champions. Can we visualize it? And visualization is an important tool that coaches often use. Mm. And, you know, I think this is a really important conversation. And, you know, Hutchinson is incredibly honest and vulnerable when he talks about this, is that we don't often think as male athletes having this type of vulnerability.
It's hard. It's been a long road. I didn't think I could, you know, get this many games and get to this point, but yeah, it's an amazing accomplishment.
where that confidence is missing as an individual, but also as a squad. And for John Herdman to come back and again look at the individual skills, but look how they are as a unit, is huge. And we've seen that. You're seeing that joy on the pitch. That's one of the other things I noticed, was how exciting this match was, riveting. The players, and I'll be quite frank with you, Canadian men's soccer has not been that exciting for me. In fact, I have paid very little attention to it in the last 8 years, but now it's sort of like, what's happening here? Oh, this is exciting. And there's a joy and a sort of a vigor on the pitch that we love to see.
You mentioned Alphonso Davies earlier, one of the star players on the team. And what Tuesday night would have been like for him, given that he grew up in Edmonton. What's his backstory?
Alphonso Davies is an incredible young man. He's really humble. He plays with Bayern Munich, which is a team in Germany, and they won the Champions League trophy, which is one of the most prestigious leagues in world global football. He is a former refugee. And he's been one of the faces of a campaign to support and draw attention and raise awareness about refugees in the world, not only in the sports sphere, but just generally. You know, I think that it's really important to remember that we're not trying to foster this idea of the good immigrant, which happens quite often, that we should give chances to only specific people. His point is we should give chances to everybody.
My name is Alphonso Davies. My parents are from Liberia and fled the Civil War. I was born in Ghana in a refugee camp. It was a hard life. But when I was 5 years old, a country called Canada welcomed us in.
And what do you think it means for Canadian soccer that young people are able to see so many different people's experiences and stories like this out on the field?
Well, I think this is definitely led by the players themselves. I think that, I mean, Alphonso Davies is 21. He's very, very young, but he's navigating the world in a place where conversations about racial justice and, you know, global conflict and ideas of, you know, whether it's anti-blackness or anti-indigeneity are very common for people that age. I mean, the discussions that youth are having, arguably, I don't know what happens in their locker room, but in other locker rooms that I'm, you know, privy to, those type of discussions certainly happen. And the women's team, if you use an example again, are very clear on what the priorities are. You know, talking about anti-oppression lenses, they were colors of orange to raise awareness for, you know, the victims of residential schools in this country and the history, and not messing around the fact that this country actually has a very brutal history of genocide against Indigenous folks. And the fact that the women do this, the men aren't there yet. They're not. And this doesn't surprise me, because I often feel that in sports spaces, women lead.
And I want to talk more about the women who've paved the way in soccer. And you mentioned before the women's team and how they've been navigating a lot of the wins while speaking up on social issues. And they just won Olympic gold in Tokyo. I reported on that. I spoke to Julio Grosso's dad, which was super exciting. Watching it live in the studio as well, winning in penalty kicks.
The substitute for Canada just about gets it through. It's a glory gold for Canada. Their first in the women's football at the Olympic Games after those back-to-back bronzes in London and Rio. Look at the release. Look at the celebrations after a stunning shootout. They stuck it.
But you have said that they are leading. But are they seeing some of this momentum we've been talking about in the sport?
Absolutely. I think that the Canadian women have dominated this space for a very long time, and we've been completely entranced, and rightly so, by them. And they are very cognizant of social issues because it intertwines. One of the things, I recently broke the story before the victory tour that was in Ottawa and then Montreal, of the Canadian women's national team writing a letter to Soccer Canada and saying, we have a list of demands and requests that we want an independent investigation into the alleged, abuse by Bob Berarda, a former coach of the national under 20 national program and with the Vancouver Whitecaps. And that case is currently in court. So they used a moment of joy and winning to redirect attention to what they feel is more important.
Going back to men's soccer here, I mean, it's a long road to the World Cup for the men. What has to happen for us to get there now?
In terms of the road, the actual pathway there, there's six games left and they're really difficult. So what happens in this, the qualification for the World Cup can get a little complicated. It's like that gif of Winona Ryder looking at math. That's kind of sometimes what it looks like. So Canada will try and resume to get one of three direct berths to the World Cup. And the fourth place team advances to a last chance playoff opportunity. Mm-hmm. So this is not going to be easy, which is why the momentum that's growing and building is going to be key here. So it's not as if we have qualified the World Cup yet. I do think we're well on our way to doing it. And do I think that fear has been instilled in other countries who may not necessarily have considered Canada a threat? Yes.
And what about if we do get there? Do you think we have a shot?
I'm never going to say no. I'm a believer. Maybe the women made me think that. I mean, I think that I've seen stories, and the World Cup is so bizarre and so beautiful in so many ways. And I'll talk about the football goddesses again. Sometimes they just want us to have things, but part of being devastated is part of the glory, right? Like us getting eliminated from the World Cup, it drove the women's squad harder at the Olympics, right? So perhaps not having a chance to perform at the highest stage will give them the impetus to work even harder. I'm looking forward to it. For me, nothing ever gets ruled out in football. Nothing gets ruled out. I've seen everything. I've seen teams that weren't supposed to win championships and tournaments. Players that weren't supposed to be superstars just do something incredible. I mean, Julia Grosso, for example, who you spoke with. You know, like, would we think that this entire thing was on her? Like, would she have that moment? So I don't know. Kyle Lahren comes out with a brace. Like, I wouldn't have pegged Kyle Lahren to have a brace. I would have thought it would have been Alfonso, you know? So we don't know. What I will say is this, I'm really looking forward to the journey.
Shireen, this has been absolutely incredible. I am so grateful that you've made this conversation so fun, so interesting, and so informative. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Before we go today, an update on the Belarus border crisis. Earlier this week, we did an episode about the plight of migrants from the Middle East camped out along the country's border with Poland. On Thursday morning, all the migrant camps were cleared by the Belarusian government. Officials in Minsk have not yet revealed where those migrants are now, though Belarusian state-run media reports that many have now been moved into a heated warehouse. Also on Thursday, hundreds of migrants from Iraq were flown home from Belarus, abandoning hopes of reaching the European Union. That's all for this week. Front Burner is brought to you by CBC News and CBC Podcasts. The show was produced this week by Simi Bassi, Imogen Burchard, Ellie Janes, Katie Toth, and Derek Vanderwijk. Our intern is Akanksha Dingra. Our sound design was by Mackenzie Cameron and Noor Karane. Our music is by Joseph Shabison of Boombox Sound. The executive producer of Front Burner is Nick McCabe Locos. I'm Angela Sterrett, in for Jamie Poisson, and I'll be back with you again next week. Thanks so much for listening.